I see gold. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 429, to be broadcast Wednesday, January 29th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening right now on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. Or if you're listening to an audio file, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Oh, things are changing in Washington, D.C. Yeah, it's happening. Senate committee voted unanimously to advance reality show and Fox News host Sean Duffy nominate him as Transportation Secretary after the former Wisconsin congressman reassured Democrats that he will make traffic safety a priority and expedite projects funded by the Biden administration. Time will tell. Just who we need to replace Pete Buttigieg. Anyway, he's got 9 kids but doesn't ride a bicycle as far as I can see. Anyone out there have any information on him? Let me know. I'm dying to hear it. I smell a rat. Anybody who needs to get lots and lots of attention on a reality TV show makes me concerned. And it seems like a lot of the new people that are coming in are all from television. What's with that? I guess I am on Facebook Live, so I'm sort of doing that. But anyway, moving on. On a positive side, another positive thumbs up to YouTube. I watched number 11 and number 12 of the UCI Cyclocross Worlds yesterday. One was on Saturday, one was on Sunday. Belgium it was the Netherlands and also Belgium. We had a couple of different races, two different days. Mudfests, total mudfests. The first one, an incredible mudfest. Oh my God, it was so deep in mud that you could not recognize the faces of the riders when they were crossing the finish line. It was just a mess. And a lot of riders took, face plants in the mud over the handlebars. If you like watching that sort of thing, I highly recommend it. And again, giant thumbs up to YouTube because free is good for me. That works really good. Coming up this weekend, here we go. The UCI Cyclocross World Championships in Libin, France. So anyway, we'll have a little bit more in the show on that. Mechanical Minute and Ron's tip for the week. Back in around the first of the year, I had found the top 10 cycling innovations that weren't like the others in 2024, and I continue to investigate them, and I'll just give you a few of them here and there. But how much would you pay to know what your tire pressure is on your bicycle and being able to read it on your computer? Overkill? I think it's overkill. Anyway, there is a sensor from a company called Outrider, and you can put these things onto your tire valves and they will communicate to your Garmin or your Wahoo or maybe even your iPhone or your Android phone app. And you can know what your tire pressure is. Why you would want to know this, I don't know. I generally pump my tires up before I leave the house, so I know what my tire pressure is. I don't have to have it on my computer to know. And Outrider has a planned retail as soon as they reach production. They have a planned retail price of $80 for this thing. No. So anyway, we're going to skip over that. But also, it says here, those who wish to shop around might also check PSICLE, Picycle, Tire Whiz, and Air Spy, all of which are installed outside of the tire on the valve stem. And should you be running tubed tires, there's a sensor packing turbo MTB PSENS inner tube. Who knows? I don't know. Personally, overkill and a waste of good money. For $80, I can buy a lot of food, and that food is my fuel, and that's how I ride my bike, and that's a good thing, right? It's a good thing. Anyway, and finally, as we are wasting our money on gadgetry and wonderful things that you can do for you and your bicycle, Shimano has been granted a U.S. patent on a wireless electronic cleat system for cycling shoes. Really? You got to be kidding me. The system is used to adjust the position of the shoe relative to your pedals as you ride. So, you know, we've got electronic shifting, right? And we know that auto adjusts for you, which is kind of a cool thing. That part I like, because of the front derailleur, you never get front derailleur rub because of electronic shifting. I'll give them some credit there. But my cleats, I don't want my cleats moving for any reason whatsoever. I want them fixed firmly to the bottom of my shoe, and I want to know that they're going to stay there. But the idea here is just that these generate data which determines and automatically moves you to an optimum shoe position. Manual adjustment is also possible. That's a big sigh, folks. That's a really big sigh. So I looked at it because, you know, it's intriguing, I guess. So it says here in the article, do we need such a thing? That's my question. It's intended for road, off-road, or gravel use. We don't know how would it stand up to the rough and tumble. The system's not actually on the market. And indeed, as with many patents, the product may never see the light of day. Let's hope not. I think this is silly. And, you know, I love clipless pedals. I think they're great. I think that Shimano makes a fairly durable and decent off-road pedal, which seems to be very, very popular amongst a lot of riders. Since they bought the Look patent, they also have a pretty good road pedal out there. But electronic adjustment, automatic adjustment of your cleat while it's on the shoe. Sorry, guys. I'm just not feeling it here. So the pedal houses the main battery powering the system, and a wireless system powers the shoe, cleat, and adjuster. Sounds like a really good reason to fail to me. I'm not digging this idea. So why such adjustability? Well, as cyclists move over different types of terrain and different uphill and downhill slopes, they adjust their body position to suit. This can change the pivot points and the angles of the legs, and thus perhaps there are potential mechanical advantages and performance gains if the foot's contact point can also adjust to compensate. It's sort of thing you might do without thinking on a set of flat clipless pedals, but obviously with most clip-in shoes, it's not possible without pulling over and getting out the Allen keys. Okay, yeah, I got that. I've never had to pull over and get out the Allen keys to adjust my cleats, other than maybe one of the cleat screws coming loose and therefore having to tighten it back down. That's the only reason I can see this, but I just don't get it. I'm not going to move my cleats forward or backward. It's going to take too much time anyway. There's no solid reason for this. So Anyway, they contacted Shimano for comment, and the response was predictable. Shimano is constantly in development of new products, but does not comment on rumors, innuendo, or speculation about products, whether they are in development or not. So what are your thoughts about this? That's my question. I think it's silly. Anyway, you know that. I have opinions here. I am Peddling Around. Of course I have opinions here. I just thought this was silly. Let's move on into the show. That's all I have for mechanical moments, I'll call them, on that one. So, bicycle retail and industry news. Let's see here. Where is it here? They interviewed people at the CABDA East show. So CABDA, Chicago Area Bicycle Association, has been putting on trade shows for quite some time, and so they had a show recently in New Jersey, and they have a person who went there from Brain, the Bicycle Retail Industry News, and interviewed a few dealers as to what they think is going to happen with them and their business over the next few years. And, you know, it's a darn good question, because retail, as we know it, has changed dramatically due to the online possibilities of purchasing product, and there's a lot of information out there for a lot of people, even on down to YouTube and YouTube videos, which are very good at explaining certain basics as far as mechanics go. So I think that there's definitely a a bonus there as far as what we can get for current information. But again, and I will say it over and over and over, never discount the quality and the importance of your local bike shop, should you still have a local bike shop. And they are diminishing. It's sort of a problem. But there are other places like Eric Leas from Casa Bikes and Outdoor Gear in Cambridge, Mass. And they have paid attention to this e-bike thing, and they're doing quite well with it. So Eric says they're going to stay on course for 2025 with core brands. They've only been open for a couple of years, but they lean heavily on Rad, Velo, Trick, and Electric. And yes, they are all dealer to consumer brands, but they have agreements with both service and supply with them. And they're going to continue going forward and going to push harder into the family cycling end of things. I think that's a good move. Family cycling is really where it's at. Family cycling is where it begins. It's when you get your kids on bikes, get them going, get them enthusiastic about it. Maybe they get so enthusiastic about it that they want to get involved in a development system, which is available in some states. We have one here in Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program. Very, very good. And so, yeah, get your kids on bikes, man. Remember when you were a kid and you were on your bike and how much fun it was and how you got around? And, you know, this is really, it's important. It's really, really important. Don't let your kids ever forget about what it's like to ride a bike. That independence, that first day that you get out on your bike when you're a kid and mom or dad lets go of the back of the seat and you're off and you're pedaling on your own and you think they're still there, but they're not. And
I remember that day. It's a day. Very clearly.
Everyone remembers that day very clearly. Yep. I have a story for it. Fran has a story for it. We all feel, you know, that it's just a really special time in your life when you get that to happen. And if you haven't put your kids on bikes yet and you're listening to this radio show or podcast, will you please, please understand that this could be one of the most important things you do for your child? It's very, very good. So a family cyclist, as as Eric names it, is someone who carries at least one kid on their bike and who replaces a vehicle, usually a car, with a bicycle. They don't have to replace all their cars, but they have to replace one car, and they use the bike to do those little rides that used to be in a car 4 or 5 miles, and they usually end up getting other friends and family members into that. So all this shop does is e-bikes. They carry they carry different brands and different types of e-bikes, but as I've talked about on this show before, you can get some amazing e-bikes that are family car oriented. I like to call it the family car oriented thing, where you get a trike or even a quad type bicycle that has an e-motor on it, so you can put the kids into a contained area that's very, very safe. It also gives you the ability and the possibility of going shopping with this and really using it like you use your car, except without the huge expense of a car. And then also being able to actually, bring it home at night, plug it into the wall, charge it up. Maybe you're using solar to do that, so you're getting an advantage there. There's a lot of great things that are happening with these e-bikes that are out there. And so this shop has specialized in that. So as I move on, he mentions here, as Boston rents continue to increase, it's been driving family cycling because you can't afford to have a house and a car at the same time, which isn't a positive, but it's positive for their business. And maybe it is a positive. Let's look at this. I know a number of people that live in cities, and I know a number of people that have made that decision to move into a city, and that decision has been primarily because of financial reasons, also work reasons, but it's a huge bonus because the car is an anchor. It is something that at least when you buy a house or a condo, or you're actually getting something back from what you've done, whereas the car just depreciates and costs you money, and depreciates more and costs you more money. And, the bicycle, on the other hand, if well kept and good quality, can last you for many, many years, and also gives you all the benefits of the health and the fitness and the lifestyle. It's all a beautiful thing. So what you can get now for, say $1,500 is now better than what you could get for $3,000 10 years ago. So you can really, that's not going to get you a great e-bike, but it will get you something you can start out with, and it will give you years of transportation. And to have that little extra motor is kind of a handy thing, especially if you live in a really hilly area or if you're trying to transport more than just yourself. I find that an e-bike with a trailer on the back, you can do a lot. You can do a whole lot with that. So it's kind of a neat thing. So anyway, their Rutland City Bikes in Rutland, Vermont was also interviewed. And they had a Yamaha dealership, which Yamaha was making these really nice, reasonably priced e-bikes, and they have recently pulled out of the U.S. market. So this gentleman went there to shop for another e-bike company, because that's what you do at bike shows. You look for what you can bring into your store, and you look to talk to people that are like-minded and learn as much as you can. It's like a big conference kind of thing too at the same time. These folks were concerned. This is Sue Mandel and JT from Rutland City Bikes in Rutland, Vermont. Shout out to you if you happen to catch this podcast. I'm just pulling this off of brain. The tariffs, if it happens, definitely they definitely think that's going to be a challenge for a lot of shops that want to do big inventory. And for the next few years, it's going to be a challenge as to where our economic system is going to go. You know, there's still always repairs. And repairs are, you can't tariff a repair. You can't really do that. So as long as people continue to ride bicycles and continue to use them to an extent where they need to get fixed, you can always run a nice repair business. What someone told me when I got into the bike business, which was, you know, like centuries ago now, for those of you who know me, I've been at this for a long, long time. It was explained to me by someone within the industry that the bicycle was basically inflation proof and economy proof, and you know, as things change, the bicycle becomes either more or less important, but it's always there. And I tend to feel that way, and I know that it has become a lot more challenging for a lot of dealers out there as they're trying to keep the proper personnel in place in their stores. That's a big one right there. Where do you find a good bike mechanic these days? It's they're getting harder and harder to find because it's not really a place that a well-trained technician is going to get a big career out of. So that tends to be a bit of a problem. You know, if you take a look at some of the other industries that are growing around, even the fact that tech schools have started to see an increase in kids going to tech schools and learning a trade, those trades don't have anything to do with bicycles because the pay scale's not there. You know, you do bikes because you love bikes. That's why I did bikes. That's what got me into it. And so that tends to be the reasoning behind it and why a lot of us got involved in the industry to begin with. We are also supporting our habit, and our habit wasn't drug related. It was equipment related, and we needed to get product for, you know, as the least amount of money as possible. So getting parts wholesale to fix your bike and keep your bike on the road was always an advantage to that sort of thing. So it really comes down to, I had a gentleman that came to me many years ago. He was looking at buying a bicycle store, and that had gone out of business because the owner had passed, and he was talking with the owner's sister about buying the store. And I looked at him and I said, why in the world do you want to get involved in the bike business? I said, there's really not a lot of money here. And he said, well, I really like to ride my bike. And I said, well, that's we all love to do that. And that's how we all got suckered into this. We all like to ride our bikes, which is good, but it's not always the best reason business-wise to get into a business, because now you're putting emotion before business, and that's a rough road that you're going to partake. But that was it. He wanted to do that, and he also had a couple of teenage daughters, and he had been in corporate America and was missing his daughters growing up, and he said, I want to get to know my family again, and this is the best way I can see to do it, because I love to ride my bike. And that's what he did. So he bought the bike shop. Again, as we had further discussions years down the road, because I eventually became one of his reps. I was then a bike shop owner, but I became one of his reps. He used to moan to me about the difficulties of keeping a bicycle store open. And so, you know, I said, I did warn you. And he said, yes, you did. Yes, you did. But, you know, if you love it, you love it. And that's all there is to it. There's also Kevin Sensenig from Sensenig's Bike Shop in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. And he says about 80% of what he does is e-bikes, and the rest is human powered. And he thinks he's looking for a better year in 2025. There's a lot of optimism out here about e-bikes. I think e-bikes definitely are going to be in our future for a long time going here, because they really do make a lot of sense. Lila Everett from Northampton Bicycle up in Northampton, Mass. I used to call on that shop. She's looking forward to turning more new product. They've done a pretty good job of selling what's on sale, but now she's hoping to bring in more stuff that's more interesting and just getting new stuff in the shop, because we've had all the same stuff for a year and a half. Probably not going to hire new people this year. We will stick with the crew we have and work a little harder. I'm hoping margins return, because it was dim in 2023. Last year was better, and I hope 2025 will be even better on margins. Without margins, you can't pay the rent. Without being able to get the amount of money that you deserve when you're selling a product, it makes it really hard to keep to do other things like pay for insurance, pay for your employees, all that. Running a business is a very, very challenging thing. I had absolutely no background in business other than working in a bike shop before I opened my own store. And people would say, so Ron, where did you go to college? And I didn't go to college. I went to business school. And they look at me funny, and I would say, yeah, I own a bike shop. And that's how I learned. Everything I learned is by doing that. And you learn a lot. I'm not saying it's a bad place to go. I think it's really good. So she says, as for 2025 trends, e-bikes are, of course, always on the up and up. They've taken over more than half of our business at this point, which she feels is insane. And I know that because Northampton Bicycle Shop is, and still is, I think they still have a racing team out of there. I think they're definitely a road shop, or had been a road shop for a long time. And so, yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing when you see that, yeah, you're still able to sell some high-end product out of your store, but you know, the place you're making your money is going to be always on repairs. And now it looks like the volume of business is going to come from e-bikes rather than from traditional bicycles. People like their motors. We are in the United States, and people really like their motors. So she's very optimistic, and she thinks it's going to be a good year. And they're going to, you know, kick some butt. So we'll see. There's a gentleman here, Thomas Koukias, from Valley Stream Bicycle in Lynbrook, New York, and he expects another great year. He's been having better years every year. 2024 was a great year. In 2 months, he'll be starting his 33rd year of owning a store. So here's a guy that stuck around and stayed with it for a while. And 33 years is a long time to own a bike shop. Believe me, I lasted for 15 of those years. I stayed in the industry for 44 years. It's a long time, believe me. And I knew all the old timers, the guys who had stuck it out, the men and women of the bicycle industry that had stuck it out and you know, stayed with it because of their passion for the whole idea of the bike shop and the industry and all. And, you know, Good for them. And a big shout out. Hey, a big shout out to Deb at Bicycles East. Happy birthday, Deb, if you happen to be listening to this today. I see it's your birthday, so that's kind of a cool thing. Although birthdays are not something I like to celebrate quite as much as I used to, but I am about to clean another decade here this year, so we shall see. And moving forward, there's a gentleman here from Hershey Cycles in Hershey, Pennsylvania, And where he's going in 2025 should be a continuation of what they've been building for the last couple of years. And he sees a big trend in step-through comfort e-bikes and step-through analog bikes, he calls them. That's funny, analog. We are a family-oriented shop, so we go through a ton of those. And if you don't know what a step-through is, years ago, we used to have something called a mixed T frame or a ladies frame. And then those of us in the industry that saw people who were less talented at swinging their leg over the top tube of a bicycle because of various reasons, could be age, could be a physical difficulty, whatever, we now call them step-through bicycles because they're much easier to get onto because you don't have to swing your leg over the top. That's a good thing. This gentleman also says he's pushing a little more into mountain bikes, and they'll try to have a more well-rounded fleet of demo bikes that customers can try. Demos are important. They make a big, big difference. I'm going to throw another thing out there. If you happen to be listening to this, this is Tony Stagliano of Hershey Cycles. Get some demo trailers in your store, too. You will be surprised. Trailers are, I rarely sold a child carrier in my store. If I did, it was probably because a customer demanded it versus me encouraging it, because I don't think that child carriers are very safe. I sold a lot of trailers, and trailers to me are the safe way to carry a child with you if you want to take child with you, but then they have so many other benefits. You can go shopping with them. You can put groceries in them. You can, I did this one day. It's very funny. I've got right now, currently in my fleet of trailers, my own personal fleet of trailers, I have three, and two of them were reclaimed from the local landfill, and which is, they don't call landfill anymore, called transfer station. But I did recover them from there because people were throwing out perfectly good trailers. And I don't understand that, because you can repurpose the trailer. I made one into a flatbed, and that trailer is the one I use if I need to go to the lumberyard and I need to pick up some 2x4s, or I need to put something big and bulky on it that I need a flat surface, and I don't want to have a soft bottom trailer to do that. So I built a platform for it, and I use it for that. And I went to the local big box lumber store, whatever you want to call it, a couple years ago, and I rolled in there with my trailer, and I'm loading it up after I got done, and people are just, I drew a crowd. Let's put it that way. Totally drew a crowd. Everybody's looking and going, you're not going to ride back home with that, are you? I said, I'm 3.5 miles from here. Of course I am. No problem whatsoever. I can do this. And they were just amazed. Who needs a pickup truck? By the way, I do have a full-size trailer that I can pull behind a motorized vehicle, too, for other times when you need bigger items to do that. That's for sure. But you'd be surprised what you can put on a bicycle trailer. And all you have to do is take one of those trailers, which, again, these were no cost to me because they were being discarded at the local transfer station. And just convert it over, so the cost is nothing. The effort is all you have to put into it. And that is this trailer weighs a lot now, and I'm going to have to pull it. But most of those trailers can handle 100 pounds, if not probably a little more. I will admit that I have pressed the limits on an old burly trailer that I have that, I actually converted over. And, you can put a lot of weight in those. But anyway, so trailers too. If you're going to have demos, have a trailer in stock that's a demo. People will buy them like crazy if you have a demo. That's what I found. So that's another good thing. So anyway, that was a little survey of people that went to the Cab to East show, and bicycle dealers that are still at it, still making some money in the bicycle business, still very, very happy with being there and doing what they do. So a tip of the cycling cap to you guys, because I tell you, I did it for a long time, and I can tell you, you are not in an easy business. But we need you. We need you badly. So support your local bike shop. I'll say it more than not. Make yourself friendly at your local bike shop. Make friends with the people who work there. They're passionate about what they do. They're not there because it was a great business model to get involved with. They're there because they love what they do. And chances are they love to ride their bikes. Chances are that maybe some of the people that are working there rode their bike into work that day. Chances are that after they get done with their day working on bicycles and talking to people about bicycles, they're going out for a ride afterwards. This is not uncommon. This is kind of part of the lifestyle. And that's really what it is. It is a lifestyle. But it's fun. And I spent 44 years there. And I can't say it was bad. I can say only good things about it, because here I am today, still talking about bicycles, still getting people enthused about cycling, still teaching indoor cycling classes, which I've been doing for over 20 years now, and still going to town meetings and talking the good talk about why we need more bike lanes and why we need more protected lanes out there. So yeah. You know, it's a good thing. It's good for all of us. So anyway, speaking of protected bike lanes, this is great. A new study by an NYU researcher shows that a type of protest invented in San Francisco has helped get protected bike lanes constructed in North America and beyond. This was on Streets Blog, and it is so, so cool. What they did, all right, let's see if I got this, make sure I get this gentleman here. This is the world's first people-protected bike lane demonstration, Golden Gate Avenue, San Francisco in 2017. And yeah, you know what it is? There's a person riding on a bike, and there are people, bodies, standing alongside the edge of the road, and they are the barrier that has been created between the cars and the person riding the bike. It's a protest. It's a demonstration. That's exactly what they're doing here. But very, very, very effective. Because when...
What are they protesting?
There's no protected bike lane here. It's an open bike lane. And what they're protesting is they're opening up the visibility to the cars that, you know, these people that are on bikes need to be protected. They're making like a human shield, basically, is what they're doing. So it's really cool. It's a great idea. And apparently it's catching on, and it's catching on around the world. So it has some global impact. And that's really cool. So they call it People Protected Bike Lane Global Expansion of an Emergent Cycling Demonstration. Study that shows that it leads to more demonstrations, and most importantly, protected bike lanes are getting installed in cities as far away as in Europe. The genius of the People Protected Bike Lane demonstrations is the very nature of the protest conveys the message of the protest. Because of that, images of PPBLs in San Francisco were quickly picked up in the mainstream media and distributed far and wide on social media. Advocates in other cities then copied the idea. It happened in DC, it happened in Chicago, and this author of this particular story found 55 demonstrations in 25 different cities and 11 different countries. pretty cool stuff. So, yeah, it's going to require some organization. Yeah, there is a bit of a risk involved here for sure. But you, if you make sure that you put everybody in brightly clad, you know, similar clothing, I would dress everyone the same way with a bright neon t-shirt or something like that. You can make a real visual effect and, get people to the early iterations also began to include participants wearing matching yellow shirts with red, which read "Protected lanes save lives," and or carry signs with similar pro safety and protected bike lane messages. Within only a few months, the first PPBL took place outside of San Francisco, including internationally. So this is a good thing. And on the same note, I will make mention, because my friend Kevin, who listens to the show all the time and is a local bicycle advocate, has announced that he has a date now, and I'll have that later on in the show. Probably not in this show, because I don't think I put it on my calendar for this week, but I will start to broadcast that. The Ride of Silence is coming up in May. And remember, May is Bike Month, and it's a celebratory time of getting people to ride their bicycles to work, to school, and to get out and have different goals that they would do through the month of May, including maybe riding their bike a day or two to work or to school, or just commuting around town to go shopping or whatever. But anyway, the Ride of Silence we have been putting on now, I'm trying to remember, is this our third or fourth year up in Mansfield at the University of Connecticut? We might be going into year four. I can't really remember. But anyway, We have a short speech ahead of time, and we don't go very far. We just ride for, maybe 3 miles or so, and we do a loop through campus with a large bunch of people, and we are quiet the whole way. It is a ride of silence. It is to point out to people who are driving motorized vehicles the folks that have been either hit by, or unfortunately we've lost to, a motorized vehicle accident. So it's very powerful. It's very, very powerful, and it will happen again in May this year. And I'll let you know exactly when we're going to do it, and we're probably going to start from the same place. We always have the community center up in Mansfield in stores, right by E.O. Smith High School. And if it gets too big, we can move it over to E.O. Smith High School, because we've got plenty of space to park cars for people that are coming in from out of town. If you ride your bike, you don't have to worry about that, but that's up to you. Anyway, we will talk more about that in the future here. There's a speed limit story here on Streets Blog. Slow down on our bike paths. Our bike lanes have become what social critic Ivan Illich once defined as a degraded public space. So there's an article in here by Rich Miller, and he talks about there might be a possible fix to this. Dying to hear it. Because, it is one of my pet peeves. People who drive their bicycles too fast on public lanes, shared trails, that sort of thing. And the speed is what is the problem. And it would be really, really nice for people to be more socially responsible when they're using a multi-use trail. So the degradation is not just a question of injury statistics, which show that electric mobility, micro mobility, causes only a small percentage of street injuries. According to the city, E-bikes, stand-up scooters, and mopeds account for 1.8% of the 449 pedestrian fatalities between 2020 and 2023, and roughly 4.5% of the 28,000 pedestrian injuries over the same period. In other words, car and truck drivers caused 98% of the fatalities and 96% of the injuries. But while it's a relatively small amount, we have problems with collisions on bike paths. And cars and trucks are far more dangerous, but guess what? If you drive your bicycle too fast on a protected lane or in a multi-use trail, and you hit someone who is not on a bike or someone who is on a bike, you can cause a lot of damage and a lot of injury to that person. So, you know, we finally are getting these great trails. We are finally getting the ability to ride in a safe place, and then we ride unsafe. Slow down. If you want to go fast, if that's your game, if that's what it's all about, it's all about your average speed, you don't belong on a bike path. You just don't belong there. If you want to go fast and your average speed is more important to you than anything else, get out on the road where you belong. You're not a motorized vehicle, you're a vehicle. And you should be out there where other vehicles are going fast. And I know it's a higher risk for you, but to risk someone else's life who is looking for protection by being on a bike lane, it's not cool. That's all. That's basically it. It's not cool. I'm ranting, and it was rant time all the way back at the beginning of the show, and I'm ranting already again. But it's one of those pet peeves of mine. I just find that people that are, we'll call them speed demons on protected trails, I have no patience for them. None whatsoever. You want to go fast? Go fast somewhere else. There's plenty of places to do it. And if you don't think it's safe to go fast somewhere else, then maybe you should slow down. Anyway, some people, such as members of the E-Vehicle Safety Alliance, say that all electric vehicles, regardless of speed, should require licenses and registrations. And it's easy for us to dismiss such groups for championing only this unworkable and counterproductive regime when they object to so many proven safe street measures such as congestion pricing, protected bike lanes. But clearly something must be done. So yeah, this is it. If nothing else, it opens a conversation, and the conversation needs to be dealt with in almost every city and town out there. If you are running a protected lane in your city or town, because this is people again are going to get hurt. So speed guidelines from bike lanes. Street safety activists have long advocated that 20 is plenty for cars, and as the city finally employs its state-given power to lower roadway speeds, it should begin to lower speed recommendations for bike lanes, which should be lower than those for cars on the road. So many European cities have a safe speed of 25 kilometers per hour. That's 15.5 miles per hour for bike paths in congested areas. Even bike-friendly Amsterdam has a pilot for a 12 mile per hour speed limit on bike paths in congested areas. An Amsterdam traffic official recently echoed something I hear every day in New York. More and more Amsterdam residents, young and old, no longer dare to cycle in the city. Due to a rapid rise of various electric bicycles, it is now more necessary to make room on the path for people who drive slower. So that goes back to my if I were king, since, you know, we have kings now, I figured I would bring this up. If I were king, I would say that any place that there is a pedestrian crosswalk, the speed limit is 20 miles per hour. Maximum speed, 20 miles per hour. And that would drastically reduce the number of pedestrian fatalities that we have going on, especially in this state. It's really gotten bad. We're not alone on this at all. The destructive nature of driving a motorized vehicle right now is just really frightening. And I'll admit, I am very distracted when I'm driving my motorized vehicle. There's just too much going on in there. Too much technology, things happening all the time. And I'll admit that there are some good things in there too, some safety things that are inside of that vehicle. But there's just a lot of visual things happening inside the car that I don't really need to be paying attention to. Yet, there they are at a finger touch, and you got touch screens in your cars. Oh, God, it's crazy, crazy. Now I sound like that old guy, because I am that old guy. So, anyway, moving on, slow down, slow down, slow down. 15 miles an hour on a protected bike lane, I have no problem with that. That's fine. That's fine. It's about all I can do anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, slow it down on the bike paths. And that was from a Streets Blog New York and an NYU person. So that was kind of a cool thing. I just thought I would bring that up. Bicycle racing. Yeah, here we go. Race results. The Tour Down Under is over as of yesterday. The Tour Down Under is over. Yes, it's in Australia. And it is the beginning of the professional bicycle racing circuit due to the fact that Australia is very warm this time of year where they have the Tour Down Under. So it kind of gets the pro race pelotons out and about. For those that don't want to race cyclocross, they can race in a road race. And the winner of the race was Jonathan Narvarez from the UAE team Emirates. Sam Welsford won the sprint jersey from Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. The EFEX King of the Mountain jersey was Fergus Browning from the ARA Australian Cycling Team. And the Zwift Young Rider jersey went to Albert Within of Philipson Little Trek, L-I-D-L, that's Lidl, I think, Trek. And the most competitive rider was Casper Peterson from Quickstep. So, anyway, that's it. That's what it was. And it's over. It was only a few, 6 days, 7 days? I can't even remember. Not that long. But then there's all sorts of other things going on right now, of course, and that is cyclocross, because we are 1 week away from the World Cyclocross Championships. I've been watching a lot of these races, as I told you, on YouTube. They're free. I got to see Wout van Aert pop his face into the crowd, and I got to see his face go forward right into a giant mud blotch. I mean, it's unbelievable. So van Aert has made a surprise decision to challenge Matthew Vanderpoel at the Cyclocross World Champions. Well, Wout, after the race that you were in, the last race I watched you in, you need another minute and 15 seconds. Unbelievable. Lucinda Brand has dominated the World Cup Series in the women's end of things, but Matthew Vanderpoel, wow, Matthew Vanderpoel. He has competed in, there were 12 races, and he has competed in, I think, 5 of them. The last two were the two before the last weekend. And 5 or 6, I can't remember, but he's won them all. And not just won them handily. So Matthew Vanderpoel is putting out the wattage that we would only expect from Matthew Vanderpoel. To watch him carve through mud is pure beauty. It really is. I've never seen anything like it. The Saturday race, which was in Mosmechelen, was so muddy, so incredibly muddy that you could not see their faces when they crossed the finish line. Every lap was a bike change. It was amazing. There were stairs, there were steep climbs, there were sharp off-cambers. Good, all just great, great cyclocross. Good stuff. So anyway, Matthew faced the eternal rival Wout Van Aert on Saturday, and they went wheel-to-wheel for a moment during the second lap, but then a fall took the Belgian out, allowing Vanderpool to cruise to victory. His front wheel dove into very deep mud and just got consumed by the mud bog that he went into, and he went flying over the front of the bars. Great stuff if you like watching a lot of crash and burns, because there were a lot of crash and burns. And Vanner is gonna stay in. He says here that Vanner will ride Cyclocross Worlds after Vanderpool scores crushing weekend double. We'll keep our eyes on that. The events this weekend, the 31st of January through the 2nd of February, the World Cyclocross Championships. On February 9th, our friends over at Airline Cycles are doing Fatty Cross at Haddam Neck, and they had a little over 100 people show up to the last one, so it's still going. And on March 2nd through the 24th, on the weekends, there will be the Frozen Four Training Series for all your road racing fans who want to get into a little Connecticut road race, training race thing. The National Bike Summit is March 11th through the 13th at the JFK Memorial Library in Washington, D.C. And one of our favorites here, the Natchog Epic, will be on March 23rd, Thompson, Connecticut, 82-mile, 60-mile, 48-mile, 32-mile, and 10-mile gravel rides. Well-attended, unbelievably well-attended last year. 800 people signed up for it. If you're not signed up yet, go to Bike Reg and do that, because it's coming, and it's coming real soon. And I guarantee you there will be good mud. If you like mud, there will be mud on various dirt roads. There will be difficult dirt roads. There will also be very few cars, because it's the quiet corner. Shh, don't tell anyone. Unless they ride a bike, they can come and play anytime they want. So it's 2025. You're going to ride more miles? You're going to ride or commute to work or around town? Are you looking for better fitness? Or are you simply enjoying your bike rides that you take by just slowing down and, you know, smelling the roses? When the roses come up, of course. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. We got to get loud. We got to get active. Our time has come. We got to stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, lack of places to safely ride your bicycle, and make a stand. Show up to town meetings. Show up and let people know how important it is to have safe places to ride your bike. And take the pedal and run challenge. Consider parking your car for just a day and ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. You can send me an email to bicycletalk, @gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.